Hello and welcome to Let's Pod This. My name is Andy Moore. It's good to be with you again this week. Friends, it's springtime in Oklahoma. As you well know, it's already been, well, close to 90. I think it's been stormy. It's been dry. We've had a little bit of everything this spring. And I think it's a good, you know, let's take a break from politics and government for a moment to talk about severe weather readiness. And I'll be honest, friends, this is we're double dipping here. This is a great opportunity. I have my niece, Penny Morgan, in studio today to talk to us about severe weather. Penny, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi.
So good to be here. Penny, tell us how old you are and what school you go to.
I am 12 years old, and I go to Hera Middle School.
All right. Great. And you're working on severe weather, which is a super important topic.
It is. This month.
So I've got a few questions that you provided to me to ask you, and we're going to just talk through it. You're going to teach us about severe weather. Does that sound okay?
Yep. That Great. Sounds fine.
If at any point, you know, you lead us astray, we'll swiftly file some sort of lawsuit. I'm just kidding. We're not going to do that. I don't have money for an attorney. But this really is an important thing. I mean, at the end of April, early May, this is like prime severe weather season for Oklahoma. And so I think my first question for you is, Penny, how should a family prepare for severe weather, and where are the safest spots?
Well, for a family should prepare or pack for severe weather by packing some stuff you really need daily, or if you need like to keep on surviving for I don't know how long, but if you like really need to and it's right in front of your house to where it'll knock it down, you're probably going to need like clothes, shoes, toothbrush, the normal daily stuff for all that severe. And then for the most needed things is flashlights, batteries, portable battery packs for if your phone dies and you need to contact someone, and mostly moving on to the safest spots. Some of the safest spots to go if you're in your home and you don't have a shelter or like a tornado shelter and all that stuff is either a bathtub to like cover up and get down because it's more grounded and more underneath it, and a basement, if you have one. There's basements, or if you do have a tornado shelter, go in there. And then, as you know, in the Twister movie, it says in the beginning of it, the original, says to go in the center of your house, because that is a really safe spot there, too.
So someplace underground or protected, like in a bathtub.
Yes.
In the lower level of your house, whatever's the lowest to the ground or underground, and then something in the middle. Away from windows, I would assume?
Away from windows, yes.
Yeah, smart. Okay, cool. And it sounds like you need to pack things that you would need, like you're going on a trip for a few days, like the essentials. Medications probably too, right? If you need any medications, that'd be a big thing. And I know some people, I've never lived in a house with a storm shelter. We have a basement now, though. I guess we should probably put some snacks down there.
Probably, like, maybe make a little small pantry or just have a really shelf of snacks, drinks, and foods. Mm-hmm. To keep safe down there in case of any emergency.
Right. Some bottled water. We have some candles down there, I think. That's probably
some candles
smart.
Will work. If I've been down in your basement before from like hide and seek and all that. Yeah. There is lights down there, but I would assume to bring candles, lighters, and stuff to keep light down there so you can see.
Because if you don't have power, electricity doesn't do much good.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Penny, what is a severe weather readiness plan? I've heard about this, but I'm not sure what all is involved in a plan.
Okay, so a severe weather readiness plan is a set of guidelines to minimize risk of injuries and damage of your home. It's to make a plan of what you're going to do for severe weather and what you should do to get more safe and have less damage in your home. To save more stuff and still have a home.
Right. That's really smart. I mean, you know, what's the old adage? Like an ounce of planning is better than a pound of something response. I don't know. But it's having a plan in advance is super helpful because invariably, right, in the middle of the night, when you get that tornado warning on your phone, you have to wake up. you're still sleeping, you've got to sprint to the basement or something and get your kids out of bed, it is way better to have a plan in advance.
Yeah, I have been through that situation before. There was, Casey and my mom were in their house watching the weather because they know I get really, really scared during that type of weather.
Sure.
And what they do is they just, like, have their phones out or the TV on the news channel to see if there is a tornado going to happen, if it's near our home. And when it was, like, around 12 o'clock at night. And they had to come wake us up. It took us a few minutes. Then we got in our car. I was in my slippers, mm-hmm. and they got completely soaked. I don't know what happened to them. But we had to run to the car, and they drove us to the shelter because it's a little farther away from our home. Mm-hmm. But we were okay.
Nice. Good deal.
We were safe. We had a little bit of a plan because I packed a bag, I think, and I did not bring it.
Right. Okay. So part of the plan is be sure to grab that stuff you packed in step one. What else would be part of a severe weather plan?
Part of it would to be it can protect yourself and make sure that everyone will be okay. It's okay if you forget your stuff, but make sure to bring that so you can don't have to buy new stuff and spend more money when you can already save money by keeping the stuff that you have. Every time that there's a tornado watch or something like that, I always have a bag ready to go.
Mm-hmm. In our old house, we didn't have a basement. We also didn't have a dedicated storm shelter, but we did have a closet under the stairs, like on the first floor. But it was full of stuff all the time. And I can think of several times that your Aunt Katie and I had to, like, we knew the storms were coming. And so we were like, okay, let's clean out the closet. So we're like dragging boxes out and moving coats out into the living room so that we could be ready to go in there. Because, again, you don't want to have to wake up in the middle of the night when the storm is bearing down and not have enough time to get to a safe spot.
Yeah. During that moment when we all had to run down to the storm shelter, the shelter part of it, it's like in a little blue house, and the shelter part of it was like flooded with water.
Yeah, that can happen too.
We haven't emptied it. We did empty it, but we didn't empty it at that time, mm-hmm. so we weren't completely ready for it. They knew it was going to happen, I think. But they didn't have time to empty the shelter.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes Oklahoma has a high water table. And so you got to make sure, especially in the spring when it's rainy like it has been now, if you need a sump pump or something down there. My wife texted me a little while ago and said, we've got water in our basement from the rain this morning. So I got to go home and get out the shop vac and clean that up.
Yeah.
Anything else about a severe weather readiness plan that we should know, Penny?
So some about it is like when you're watching the news, see what's going to happen. If there is one, they will try to walk you through it and what to do to get everything safe, to get the person safe, to get ready to go to the basement or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Like the meteorologist on TV or something?
Yeah, the meteorologist on TV, like News 9, mm-hmm. K9 or something like that. And they try to walk you through the steps to help you with that.
Yeah. What do you know much about, like, what kind of technologies help warn people or, like, reduce damage from severe weather?
I kind of do. Some technologies like tornado sirens, tsunami, and all that are to be able to help and warn people, like, to wake up and tell them to go get ready, go get in your shelter, and all that if there's a tornado nearby. Like, in the recent Twisters movie, like the one that was made, I think it was this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And during that scene where I don't want to say any spoilers though, so there's that problem.
That's okay.
But
this is a political podcast. People aren't worried about severe weather spoilers from Twister, I don't think.
That's true.
Also, we probably know what happens. There's a tornado.
Yeah, but in that scene where main character one and main character two. Mm-hmm. I kind of forgot their names. But I think one was Kate? Yeah, Kate and the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
They were at a rodeo watching that, and all of a sudden there's a big old tornado nearby coming in that direction. And these two people from in a little shop thought it was just a fake alert when literally the tornado siren came crashing through the windows.
Oh.
So, I think we should make them a little more sturdier, but that's just mine.
Well, so that's Hollywood a little bit, right?
Yeah, that's
in
Hollywood.
In real life, there'd be a rodeo arena full of people with cell phones that are probably going off to be like, there's a tornado bearing down on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Friends calling in, hey, get out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, some of these technologies are called, or like some different ones besides the tornado sirens, are advanced weather forecasting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about that, but like, yeah. And it's an advanced weather forecast. It's to tell you what's going to happen, if it's going to happen, and where it's going to happen.
Yeah. So staying, as we say, like weather aware, right? Watching the weather a few days in advance as they're like getting more information. They can help you know what to anticipate in terms of severe weather, and then you can start making a plan from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do that. And then there's satellite imaging. I guess it's like when they're showing you where all the severe weather is, where all the weather is on the map and the news.
Mm-hmm.
We all know it's a green screen.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that's a satellite imaging. It's mm-hmm. imaging where all the bad weather is, categorizing it, and you letting the weather forecasters show us where all that is
mm-hmm.
and where it's going to happen. Like, let's say Oklahoma, Texas, Norman, and I guess a bit of California and all mm-hmm. that. That's going to help. And then the last one that I have or know about is, let's see, radar and early warning services.
Ooh, I love radar.
Radars are really fun. It's kind of like the tornado sirens. When in that moment that I was talking about, they had the tornado sirens going off before the tornado was near us, so everyone would know that, oh my gosh, the tornado is coming. It's time to get ready to go into the basement or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an early warning service that can go on for hurricanes, tornadoes, tsunamis, and other types of severe weather.
Yeah. Awesome. I will plug for our listeners, if you're interested in this, I use the RadarScope app on my phone. I downloaded that. I think it was the first app I ever paid for, because all the meteorologists used it. Like, I'd see them on social media and that's what they would post from. And I was like, this seems like a really high powered radar app. And it is. It's like a direct feed to the like actual radars that like the professionals use. And so it's super up to date with like low latency, meaning like it's not what happened 10 minutes ago. It's what's happening like 2 minutes ago, like as quick as the data can get processed. And if you're a big weather nerd like I am, you can do what the guys on TV do. You can look at the wind velocity and see the couplets, and you can see like where rotation is. There's warnings on there, storm tracks. If you're a weather nerd at all, you can go deep. I know we've got a couple of National Weather Service employees that listen to our podcast, and so you're probably at home going, yeah, Andy, like this is old news. We've got new, like fancy radars now. Mm-hmm. You probably do. But for my money, the $10, whatever I spent on RadarScope, it's been great. I think we all have our like suite of weather tools, right? And I'm probably more of a nerd than most, but I use RadarScope a lot. The Oklahoma Mesonet, which is a free app, has tons of maps, like just tons of data. Like, right, I pulled it up right now, and just under the rainfall tab, you can look at how much rainfall has accumulated in the last 1 hour, 3 hours, 6 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, 7 days, 10 days, 14 days, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 120 days, 180 days, 365 days, as well as how many consecutive days we've had less than a tenth of an inch and less than a quarter of an inch, and then just today's rainfall. That's just rainfall. They also have information on air temperature, dew point humidity, fire weather, human comfort, pressure, soil moisture, soil temperature, solar radiation, satellite, station plots, upper air, wind, agricultural advisories, and then the graphics from the National Weather Service and other advisories. It is just a metric ton of data. And I love looking at it because you can see where the dry line is. You can see what the temperature is in the panhandle, and you can tell it's coming. It really helps me feel weather aware. So
I'm a bit of a weather nerd myself. I am completely terrified of even just the thought of rain.
Oh, yeah. Just rain itself?
Just rain itself.
Are you made of sugar?
I don't know.
Okay. Not going to melt if you get wet?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm just not a big fan of seeing rain and hearing thunder and all that. That's why I have a trouble sleeping at night when it's really, really raining and just raining
in
general.
Like last night?
Yeah, like last night, I was not sleeping that great. So, I am a weather nerd, though. I like watching, the Twisters movies over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other day I was just bugging my mom and Casey saying, can we watch the original Twisters? Can we watch the original Twisters? But too bad it's rent or buy on Prime Video now.
Yeah.
So, Casey has it saved on his computer thing, so he can just watch it from there, but it's a long process because it's a big computer.
I'm going to go on a limb here and say that watching a movie that's designed to be scary about weather might be something that feeds into you being scared about weather.
Maybe. I don't know. The first time I saw the Twister movie, the original one,
mm-hmm.
it was a few years ago, but I sat behind my dad and he farted on me.
Okay.
That was classic dad move.
Classic dad move. Nice.
Because I was scared of it, but I loved it at the same time.
Sure. The fart or the movie?
The movie.
Okay. Penny, we've talked about a lot of things. We've talked about how a family can prepare for severe weather. Where are the safest spots in the home? What is a severe weather readiness plan? What technologies help warn people reduce damage from severe weather? Is there anything else that we've not talked about with weather that you think is important people know?
I don't think I have anything else left.
Okay. Where would you recommend people get information if they are looking for weather information? Do you have any suggestions?
For weather information, I would probably recommend the app that you said and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
But also Casey, my stepfather,
mm-hmm.
but he uses the K9 weather app.
Mm-hmm.
News 9 app.
That's great. Yep. All the stations, News 9 for Oklahoma City, KFOR, KOCO, Fox 25, they've all got apps. You can pick your favorite. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we use those to help find the weather and all that. I need to download it. Yeah. Right now, I'm just using the default weather app.
Also good, right?
Apple. It's not that accurate.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the TV stations, as well as a lot of the weather apps, get their data from somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Apple doesn't have their own weather stations they rely on usually federal, National Weather Service data.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it comes out of Norman right here in Oklahoma. We really have way better weather coverage than most other states. So whenever I travel, even to Washington, D.C. or somewhere, and I watch the weather, they're like, well, it might rain today. We really don't know what's happening. I'm like, how do you, it just feels like amateur hour. And it's because they don't have the severe weather. It's not as deadly as it is here. And we have literal state-of-the-art radars and stuff. They're awesome.
Yeah, but I mean, not that accurate. It was one day I was looking at the weather because it was looking about as it was about to rain. Not about to rain. Yeah. But, and then I checked the weather app to see if it was going to rain. It said a 95% chance that it was going to be sunny that day.
Oh, yeah.
It rained.
Yeah. So this is a hard thing. This is a good note to close on because people get really upset about this, right? The weather, the meteorologists say there's a 70% chance of rain. That can be interpreted a few different ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
Generally, it means that that there's a chance of rain somewhere in 70% of the viewing area, which is half the state. And so even if it doesn't rain where you are, but it rained where I live, technically that's correct. It doesn't mean it's going to rain in every square inch of the area. That almost never happens. And also, just because there's a good chance of something happening, it's almost never 100%. In the summertime, we know it's going to be sunny today, and there's 0% chance of rain or 1% because weird things happen. But
yeah,
forecasting is both an art and a science, I think. And I feel like our meteorologists generally get it good. My other resource is I use the weather stations, especially during severe weather coverage, because they've got storm trackers everywhere. But I go to the National Weather Service website. It's on my favorites on my phone and on my computers. If you go to weather.gov, you can put in your zip code. Then the National Weather Service homepage for here in Norman is really great. They've got forecasts every week. If you're a weather nerd like me, you can read the forecaster's discussion, which is like in weather nerd speak. Like right now, I'll read the first sentence. It says, this is from 2:16 p.m. today. Outflow from morning convection continues to push south and west of our area, connecting with a cold front in the southeast Texas panhandle. In our area, the front currently runs from roughly Ellis to Kay counties, with much of the instability confined south of the front, with the best instability south of the outflow. It's more goes on like that for about three paragraphs. I find that rewarding and interesting. I recognize that you, as a 12-year-old, might not, but if you're an old man that cares about weather, I love it straight from the scientist's mouth. All right, my niece Penny Morgan, thank you so much for being on the show.
Of course, thank you for having me,
friends. I'll be right back with our kind of news roundup from this week, and then we'll get to that. Stand by. Friends, I've spent the week in Las Vegas at the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center, BISC, at their annual conference, and it was really good. I'm not a huge Vegas fan, but I didn't really do much around town, but the conference itself, which is why I was there, was actually really, really enjoyable. Fascinating conversations, the sessions were well curated, the attendees, it's not huge, right? It's a few hundred people. Including, I think there were four or five of us from Oklahoma, which was great to spend some time with friends and colleagues from here. That's not always the case when you go to some of these things. And also, you know, usually I do a lot of, a decent amount of traveling for my national organization. And often in these democracy related events, I am surrounded by folks from the coasts, right? And it is usually light on people from the middle of the country. So you get, you know, a disproportionate share of folks from California and Oregon and New York and D.C. and Maine and Florida. But here, because the initiative petition was something that was really included in state constitutions as like a bit of a populist element here, that was stemming from like dissatisfaction or distrust with politicians as people migrated across the country. And so you start seeing it pop up in states like Arkansas and Missouri and Oklahoma and Utah and, you know, all the way out to California. And so that meant that this conference, which was about ballot initiatives, how we use them, how we protect the process, how we expand it, really had a disproportionate share of folks from states like ours. And so there was a whole bunch of folks from Missouri, a bunch of folks from Arkansas. All of us in these states are like battling attacks on the initiative petition. Some of them are similar. Some of them, you know, are a little bit different, which gives us some clue into like what we should expect we might see, you know, next year or what we might see lawmakers try. And because of that, there's a lot of interest from the states that aren't yet seeing these attacks, the few that aren't yet, and getting them better prepared to defend the initiative petition where they're at. And then even for states that don't have it right now but are trying to, like, build some grassroots support and develop a legislative advocacy strategy to maybe get it added as a new path for legislation, it helps them kind of know, like, what's working and what's not. You know, I've mentioned, I think a few weeks ago, this bill that's going through the state legislature here right now, Senate Bill 1027. It is just bad. Like, it would be absolutely disastrous for the initiative petition in Oklahoma. It changes it in some really fundamental and ultimately unnecessary ways that makes it essentially harder to collect signatures, harder to raise money, while also making it more expensive. And so you can see, like, when they're trying to make something more expensive and also limit who is able to contribute and limit who's able to sign the petitions, it makes it like virtually unusable. Now, right now, this bill, Senate Bill 1027, is sitting in the state house. It started in the Senate. It's passed the Senate, went over to the House, and it is scheduled to be heard on the House floor. They haven't set the date yet. We thought it might be yesterday, and it didn't happen. So it really could be any time. So if you haven't yet contacted your state House members about this bill, please do. And if you have contacted your state legislators, your state House members, and they are already supportive, great. would you consider making another call or another email to somebody else? Maybe you know another legislator. Maybe you just want to start at the top and work your way through leadership. However you want to approach it, I think it would be beneficial. I don't think it's going to be hurtful, but they really need to know that Oklahomans like having the initiative petition and would want to protect it. So again, this is Senate Bill 1027. It's bad. We want them to vote no on it. And if you can take a few minutes just to send a note or make a quick phone call and leave a message, that would be greatly appreciated. All right, well, moving on to what's happened this week in Oklahoma politics. Towards the end of last week, Senator Adam Pugh from Edmond filed a resolution to reject the new social studies standards that were sent to them by the State Board of Education. You might remember this, that Superintendent Walters, you know, put the new social studies standards up for a vote. And then, like the night before, just a few hours before the vote, he actually changed a couple of things. So it was a different version. And so those three new board members on the State Board of Education, who just got appointed by Governor Stitt back in February, were like, hang on, this is not the version we thought there were. So they went back and forth. There was some, you know, kind of anger back and forth between Superintendent Walters and these new board members. Walters had some choice words about them. You know, he's said that they were alleging that they were creating a fake controversy and lying about what happened back in that February meeting regarding these social studies standards. Regardless, the measure or the standards are before the legislature to either approve or disapprove. And Senator Pugh filed this resolution saying he was going to reject them, or calling for a rejection, because he said it's due to the magnitude of the decision about this and the uncertainty about how it actually came down at the state board. And also an estimated cost of $33 million additional dollars to develop new curriculum. He thought these should be rejected. And ultimately that got shelved by the Senate, right? The other day on the 29th, we saw a bunch of new co-authors on that resolution, including House Speaker Pro Tem Anthony Moore, the House Majority Floor Leader Josh West, the House Majority Whip Tammy West, no relation. So we started to see these like leadership folks sign on, but ultimately it came down to a really long caucus meeting. Superintendent Walters met with, I think, members of both chambers, Republican caucuses, for sure the Senate, and they came out of that, and Senator Paxton, the pro tem, said there was just not an appetite among his caucus to reject them, and so I think they voted to allow them, or at least if they take no action, they get adopted anyway. And so looks like they're going to take effect. What happens next is really uncertain. Part of this still has to be funded. As my understanding is, part of the standards in order to be implemented would have to be funded by the legislature. And so it might be that they decide to adopt the standards but not fund the standards as a way to kind of take the bullets out of the gun there. We'll see. One thing that is worth noting, I think, is that part of what happened after this resolution came about was that there were several conservative groups, including the Republican Party and people from Moms for Liberty, who wrote a letter and signed a letter and then circulated it amongst Republican legislators saying, in no uncertain terms, that if Republican legislators were to reject the standards, they're going to be primaried from the right, like by more conservative candidates. And the reason this is, I think, particularly scary to some Republicans is that we saw last year, House Appropriations Chair Kevin Wallace and Senate Majority Leader Greg McCourtney, he was supposed to be the incoming pro tem, we saw both of them lose to more conservative candidates. So they already have a track record of taking out even well-respected and powerful members of the legislature lost in the primary. There's some wealthy folks. There's a billionaire or two in Texas that have been funding these campaigns. It is ironic that it is literally out-of-state money helping defeat Oklahoma Republican legislators from their own party. But because of that threat, I think the legislature decided to back down on this fight right now. Now, I mentioned earlier that back in February, Governor Stitt replaced three of the State Board of Education members, right? He pulled three off and appointed three more. And the reason he gave for that was low test scores in our state. We're still 49th in education. And he also said, quote, needless political drama, which was undoubtedly a jab against Superintendent Walters. So there was three that Stitt had appointed. There was three that were already on there. And then there's one open spot. And I didn't even realize, or I forgot that this spot was open. But it's been one other spot that's been open for about a year and a half. They had tried to fill it before Stitt appointed somebody, but that person was not, that appointment was not confirmed by the Senate. I don't think it was even heard by the Senate. And so he has come back now and appointed somebody else to fill this spot. The appointee's name is Becky Carson. She is a retired special education teacher. She has 30 years of classroom experience. And so she is now one of, I believe, three members of the State Board of Education who have education, like direct classroom experience. Superintendent Walters is another one. It'll be really interesting now. So this gives Governor Stitt four, like a majority of the state board now have been appointed by him in the last 3 months. And that might have a significant impact on decisions, because up until now, it's been kind of even, and Walters was the deciding vote. But now I think it means that, that there is a majority who might be opposed to the platform that Walters has. And that slight shift in balance of power might result in some different priorities coming out of the State Board of Education. Could I be wrong? Absolutely. Who knows? We'll have to wait and find out. A few weeks ago, we've talked about the Wildfire Task Force that Governor Stitt formed in the wake of the March 14th wildfire outbreak. You know, more than 100 fires in 40-some-odd counties. And Stitt had strong words. He ousted the head of the Department of Forestry over it. Stitt notably lost a house in the fire as well. He said that's not the reason why, but it does, I think, raise eyebrows at least. The report is available on the state website. It's only one page long. It's pretty short. That's a little unusual, perhaps a bit refreshing. Sometimes these task force reports are, 30 pages long, and that's a lot to sort through. This one really is just like a bullet point list of recommendations. And it appears to be the first time that all of these stakeholders met together. There were state, Department of Forestry officials. There were local fire chiefs. There were people from Oklahoma City and Tulsa, fire departments. There were emergency management personnel. And one of the big things that came out of this task force report is a recognition that entities had a really hard time communicating with each other, during the big fire. And I don't know how much you know about emergency management communication. I don't know a ton, but I know a little. And that is, when you've got a lot of people, right? Everyone has their own kind of dispatch, and there might be multiple jurisdictions, right? Different cities, different counties across the state using different channels. They're all trying to talk to one another, or talk amongst themselves and with one another. And it sounds like the task force identified that there just isn't a umbrella, super connecting way to help all these entities speak to one another. And that might have contributed to some of the challenges they faced in this, admittedly historic in a bad way, wildfire situation. The report does not mention former Forestry Department Geller or assign any blame for that. But Stitt still says this really vindicates his position that resources weren't used effectively, that the response fell short. I think my take from reading this report and all the coverage of this story is that it was a really unusual situation and really very difficult. And sometimes in these unprecedented experiences, we identify the cracks in the system that can and should be addressed. And so I'm hoping, right, that this task force report, and they're going to form some working groups, that they might be able to work through some improved ways or some ways to improve communication and coordination across the state, including, not just coordination, but training and kind of retention strategies to keep people involved. They also identified there was a huge lack of volunteer firefighters, like a big need there. So if you listeners happen to live in a rural area that has a volunteer fire department and you've always wanted to get involved, now is your chance. You should really do it. Apparently, Oklahoma needs you. Now it's, what is this? May 2nd. We are nearing the end of the legislative session. They got to be done at the end of this month. And that means that all eyes are on the state budget. The total budget we're expecting is going to be about $12.5 billion. But even if they fund it flat, like the same levels they did last year, functionally, there's about a $320 million shortfall because, well, they've got to account for this coming fiscal year being the first full year of the elimination of the state's portion of the grocery sales tax. They also have some decisions they need to make about some really big ticket items that have been requested, right? OU requested $250 million for a pediatric hospital. OSU's requested $295 million for a veterinary medicine school. Governor Stitt just the other day said he wants $312 million to purchase a private prison down near Lawton. I don't know what that's about. It kind of came out of nowhere to me. There's the ever lingering uncertainty about the Department of Mental Health and their needs. That is still being audited and researched. And, they also were supposed to be building a new inpatient mental health facility, the Donahue Behavioral Health Campus, which was going to be located near the OSU OKC area, over off of like 10th and Portland area. But this week, state lawmakers moved one step closer to abandoning that plan because it's being really costly and delayed. So they already were looking at, a couple of weeks ago, they'd said they were $125 million short in the budget and that the facility won't be open until 2028. It was supposed to open this year. And the total project was supposed to cost $137 million. So to say that they are way over is a huge deal, and way over on terms of cost and timeline. And so I think that given everything else that's been going on over there, they are going to like press pause on this and then really kind of decide what the right plan is. I think they are looking to use some ARPA money to purchase land and renovate an existing building somewhere in central Oklahoma City. But it would be a lot smaller. So they were looking at originally 330 beds. This new plan only has 197 beds, which is still more than what they've had at Griffin and Norman, which is only about 100 beds. But I think it's about the same as Griffin, but it'll be a much newer facility. There's a lot of, I think, unanswered questions still, a lot of uncertainty, especially given the rest of the agency's budget and what that really is going to look like. So we'll have to see. So that's just one part of the state budget. Additionally, there are additional ARPA dollars. They've got about $1 billion or $1.5 billion of ARPA dollars that have to be spent by the end of next year. They've got to make decisions about. So one-time money is good for one-time costs, like a capital expense, like a new mental health hospital. So maybe that's a good fit. Of course, there are lots of like one-time costs that can pop up, including the ones, the pediatric hospital, the veterinary medicine school, the prison, all this kind of stuff. As they, the old joke goes, right? A million here, a million there. Pretty soon it starts adding up to real money. And on top of all of that, Governor Stitt wants a tax cut. He still is doubled down on that. He wants to eliminate the state's state income tax. Now, I will say, like, taxes get a bad rap, right? Because we don't, I don't think we always connect the dots between what we pay for and what we get in return. I mean, taxes are really a way for all of us to pool our money together to buy things that we could not afford to do on our own, right? Like things like roads and bridges and public schools and school lunches for a million children and clean water across the state that's safe to drink, clean air to breathe, the electrical grid infrastructure, right? All the water lines go underneath the ground, the internet lines that come to your home or your office. A lot of that stuff, some of that's privately, but a lot of it is done as utilities that are funded by taxpayer dollars. Emergency management professionals, right? For like when nature goes wild and we have an outbreak of 100 wildfires across the state. Like all of that is, this is why we pool our money and say, this is for the greater good for our community, for our society. Therefore, it necessarily means that when you cut taxes, that you have less money. Stitt tried to say that a tax cut doesn't mean that millions of dollars will be cut from state government, but that's exactly what it means, right? That's if you're like, we get millions of dollars from income taxes, but we're going to cut that. Okay, well then you're not going to get that money. Now you might rework the tax policy to have that revenue come from somewhere else, but like that money's got to come from somewhere. It doesn't just come out of the air. And taxes, or you know, you can call them fees, but like coming from either individuals or businesses is like the way that comes in. And so at the end of the day, it means that we will have, like, if we bring in less money, then we have less money to spend. And here we keep having expenses. Like, you know, life is not free, as anyone with kids will tell you, or, you know, if you want to buy food or eggs. So the next month, I imagine, will be hyper-focused on the budget. There'll be some other policy bills going through the legislature, but there's a lot of tough decisions that are going to have to be made. It's not a huge, like, difficult year like it was in 2017, 2016, 2017, 2018 even. So we'll see what happens. Also this week, just on the 30th, the U.S. Supreme Court heard the case from Oklahoma, the Oklahoma Statewide Charter School Board versus Drummond, which is the case about St. Isidore of Seville Catholic virtual school that wants to contract with the state of Oklahoma, right? So this comes down to an issue of, can the state use state dollars to fund a private school? Some interesting battle lines being drawn, right? Oklahoma Attorney General Gitner Drummond opposes this. He sued the Charter School Board in 2023 over its contract with the school. Drummond, of course, is running for governor. On the other side of this is Governor Stitt and Ryan Walters and Congressman Kevin Hearn. There are some like pretty interesting kind of battle lines there, even among the Republican Party. The Democrats, I think, are opposed generally. Pat McFerrin, local pollster and political strategist, said he did some surveys in 2023 that showed that Oklahoma's Republican voters were split on the issue of religious charter schools. Because of that, McFerrin said he expects that the most successful political figures will try to stay away from weighing in on this case, right? McFerrin's quote in Oklahoma Watch is that Drummond obviously has a passion for it, and so do Stitt and Ryan Walters on the other side, and I think others are generally trying to stay out of it. So, like, we haven't seen any amicus briefs from other elected officials, at least not yet. And I guess by now it's kind of too late because the court's already heard it. But we did see amicus briefs from Senator James Lankford, from Josh Hawley of Missouri, Kevin Cramer of North Dakota, Ted Budd of North Carolina, and Ted Cruz of Texas. They all submitted an amicus brief supporting the school. And why do these people from other states care? Well, because they want this precedent. They want this ruling to serve as precedent to allow, to like unlock, free up other states to do the same thing, right? So like essentially redirect public school dollars to a charter school that is religious in nature and governed by its own board rather than being governed by this state. So there's a lot of like kind of nuance here. And this is ultimately shaping up to be a case about the separation of church and state and like, where is that line drawn? We don't expect SCOTUS will rule anytime soon. They typically wait until June at the end of term to drop all of their rulings. They always have to think about it, write about it, discuss amongst themselves. So it takes some time. So we'll check back in a couple of months and see what happens. But this is, you know, for Oklahoma for sure, this is the biggest decision, biggest Supreme Court case since the McGirt ruling. This one would have pretty far and wide implications, not just in Oklahoma, but across the country. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. Thanks again to my niece, Penny, for being here and giving us some weather news. Thank you, listeners, for being here, as always, and for what you care about, what you mean to this state. Without you, we are lost. As we say every week, decisions are made by those who show up. Find a way to show up.